Okay, good morning, everyone. An incredible zechus to be able to be here with all of you this morning and to continue Emir Tzashem in our journeys through Sefer Tehillim. So, just to give you a little bit of a background to the genesis of this year, over the Amtav of Shavuos, I was davening in Yom Minyan on my block, and we were reciting Yizkor. And one of the phrases that many have the custom to say as an introduction to Yizkor comes from Sefer Tehillim. There are a number of different minhagim as to how people recite Yizkor, the Kamali Tfilos, the Yizkor Tfilos, some say Tehillim beforehand, Yoshe B'Seser, and then there are a couple of other beautiful Tfilos that kind of been composed over the ages. There are a bit more of a compilation, with some psukim from Tehillim, some psukim from Mishlei. And one of the psukim that really struck me was a pasuk from Perek Ches in Tehillim. And it's a pasuk, you have it on your sheet. It's the underlined pasuk. Ma enosh ki siskerenu, o ben adam ki sifkedenu. What is man that you should remember him? And son of man that you should be mindful of him. So, okay, it was very striking pasuk. You know, again, speaking, it appears, at least at first glance, that the David HaMelech really speaking to the almost like nothingness of man, to the insignificance of man. What is man that you should remember? Why should man even matter to you? What does anything matter to you? Now, of course, it struck me that in the context of Yizkor, so there's nothing that makes a person feel as little, as small, or insignificant as death, right? Death is the great humbler of all men. It makes no difference how much money you have. It makes no difference how much influence you have. It makes no difference how much even you've accomplished in your life. When a person dies, they die. I mean, everyone dies the same way, and life comes to an end for every single person. So when looking at it through the lens of Yizkor, I understood what the composer of the tefillah was trying to convey. Because part of the power of Yizkor, again, not a share in Yizkor, but part of the power of Yizkor is, of course, the ability to remember our loved ones, but also the ability to really contemplate that, to focus on our mortality. Because the hope is, although most of us don't like focusing on mortality, most healthy people don't normally like focusing on mortality, but focus on mortality is the best way to live life in an impactful fashion. If you realize that life is a finite, non-renewable resource, and you know not how much time you have on this earth, there is no greater catalyst to accomplish the things you want to accomplish and to stop kicking the proverbial can down the road. So I was curious when I had taught Perek Ches in Tehillim, what did I say about this pasuk? And much to my surprise, I did not have a shiur on Perek Ches. So whether this means that somehow in our years, in our journey through Tehillim, for some reason I didn't do Perek Ches, which would be surprising that I would skip this particular kapitel, being that it's so impactful, or maybe I had a different computer back then. I'm not exactly sure. But in any event, I realized it was a good opportunity to go back and to visit this capital. So going a little bit out of order, going back to Perek Ches, and the truth is, the profundity of this choice was solidified and was reinforced with something we just learned in Daf Yomi, actually in today's Daf, which speaks to this dynamic, and I hope that you'll all find impactful as well. So Vitilka Parakhes. Now we're going to spend a little bit of time on this parak this year, and certainly I think next year also, maybe even future shiurim, and we'll see how long it takes us. This morning, I'm not going to focus on the opening of the shiur. Remember, again, those of you who are already veteran members of the Tehillim shiur know that when going through Tehillim, generally, the way we like to do it is to first focus on the context of the kapitel. When did David HaMelech say it? What was happening in his life? What is it a response to? We'll get to that in future weeks. This week, I really want to focus your attention just on Pasuk Hey, verse 5, which is the underlined line in number 1. Ma'esi, here you have it, Perek Ches, Pasuk Hey, chapter 8, verse 5. Ma'enosh ki siskerenu, o ben adam ki sifkedenu. What is man that you should remember him, and son of man that you should be mindful of him? So the commentaries on Tehillim already scramble to try to understand What is it exactly that David HaMelech is trying to convey? You know, in general, for example, in the world of Musar, there were often two different schools of thought. There was a school of thought of Shiflus HaAdam and Gadlus HaAdam. How do you get people to become the best version of themselves? Do you tell them how great they are and play off their greatness? You're incredible. You're wonderful. You're special. But you could be even holier and better. Or do you focus on Shiflus HaAdam? Do you focus on the lowliness of man? And ultimately focusing on all of the sinfulness, the shortcomings, with the hope that people want to correct their shortcomings, their faults and their flaws. So it's interesting, time has kind of shown that the school of thought, you know, the most famous yeshiva associated with the Shiflus HaAdam approach was Nirvadik. Nirvadik, which was one of the major Musi yeshivas, ultimately focused on this concept of the lowliness of man. That realize how insignificant you are, how little you are, how filled with flaws, and build yourself back up. It's interesting to note that, at least certainly contemporarily, that approach doesn't usually work for most people. Most people, if you tell them that they're lowly, they're nothing, they're insignificant, they'll usually just say, okay, and then just continue to go ahead and move on with their lives and feel absolutely no expectation to accomplish anything. So it appears that contemporarily the better approach ultimately is to focus on the growth of man. And even David HaMelech understood this concept. When you look at Tehillim, as much as David HaMelech speaks about shortcomings, whether it's his own or just the shortcomings inherent in the human condition, David HaMelech always puts a very positive spin on man, on who man is. And so it's interesting to note that in this particular capital, David HaMelech seems to be so focused on the shiflus, on the lowliness of man. So the Ibn Ezra number 2 says as follows. He says you have to understand this pasuk in the greater context of the capital. Look at number 2. Yadua ki hayareach ba'achadasar kochavim hanekuda ba'agula. So the Ibn Ezra says, the truth is, if you want to appreciate this phrase, you have to look at the pasuk before. So if you jump back up to number 1 for just a moment, you'll see that in pasuk Dalin in verse 4, so the David HaMelech writes, Ki era shamecha ma'aseh etzbosecha yarech v'kochav masher konanta. When I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established. So says the Ibn Ezra, what David HaMelech means is like this. When you look at the natural world and you see the awesomeness of nature, the reaction that man often has to the awesomeness of nature is a feeling of smallness or a feeling of insignificant. And this is true. We all know this. Meaning, if you ever go outside, I find this often at night. If it's a beautiful night and it's a clear night and you see the stars and you see the moon and you realize how small you are in the cosmos. Right? You know, we often, whether we realize it or not, often think that we are the center of the universe. Right? I don't mean like negative egocentricity, just people naturally. Again, the world revolves around me. Right? It's about my needs, what I want, what I need. And we often, whether we realize it or not, think sometimes that we're like the most important thing on God's earth. Obviously, sometimes in an unhealthy way, but I think just the natural derech of man is to think that way. And David HaMelech is saying is, when you look at the natural world, when you look at the moon, you look at the stars, you look at the sun, you look at nature, you stand outside and you see the trees swaying in the wind, you see a powerful rain, a thunderstorm, a snow, you realize, my gosh, I'm one little speck in this whole great universe. It says the Ibn Ezra, that's the meaning. David HaMelech is not disparaging man. David HaMelech is not telling us that we are unworthy. He's not telling us that we're insignificant. David HaMelech is reflecting. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I look at everything you've made. I look at the vastness of the universe. And I am humbled by my smallness in the vastness of the universe. But I want to show you something amazing. Because the Gemara, again, this was literally what I'm sharing with you today, is actually from today's Daf Yomi. The Gemara records this pasuk as part of a very dramatic story. So if you take a look at number three, and actually I'll just tell you something amazing as an aside. So the Gemara, I want to quote to you now from Masechet Shabbos. Literally, this is from today's daf. So you could say you learned the daf today, or at least part of the daf. Hey, so what's amazing, and this is just an incredible thing, these Gemaras that we've been doing since Sunday, since Isru Chag of Shavuos, have all been about the story of Sinaitic revelation. It's incredible. You know, Daf Yomi is a 7.5-year cycle to finish Shas. And sometimes the timing of the Gemaras we do are just nothing short of divinely orchestrated. They're coming right off the Yom Tov of Shavuos. We literally have all of the Shavuos Gemaras. It's incredible. So this is the Gemara I'm quoting to you from. Take a look at number three. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said as follows. B'sha'a sha'ala Moshe l'morom. So when Moshe Rabbeinu ascended Mount Sinai to be able to receive the Torah, so Amru Malachi Asher Tifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Malachim, the angel said to God, Ribono Shel Olam, Ma Li Yelod Isha Beinenu. The Malachim were incensed, the angels were incensed, that a mortal had climbed up into the celestial sphere. They were beside themselves. They said, what is a mortal? And look how they described Moshe Rabbeinu. Like, Yelod Isha, someone born to a woman. Right? The Malachim are directly fashioned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu with obviously no human partnerships. What is this being that is the result of human relationships, human partnerships in creation? What is he doing here? So, Amar Lahem, Lekabel Torah Ba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Malachim, Moshe is here to receive the Torah. Amru lefanav, chamuda ginuza, sheginuza lecha, tisha, meos, v'shivim, ba'arba, doros, kodem shnivra olam, atam avakesh, litna lebasar v'adam. So again, the Malach says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what? The Torah, which has been sitting in your treasure house for 974 generations before the world was ever created, which of course is not literal, but what it means is Torah existed before the world existed. Sechadish Baruch Hu, you're going to take something that predates creation, that predates everything, and you're going to give it to man? You're going to give it to a human being? Ma enosh kisizkerenu, uben adam kisifkedenu. What do the Malachim say? The Malachim recite this pasuk. This is what the Malachim said. What is man? What is man that you should remember him? Ribono shel Olam, do you see these people? Do you see what they do? Do you see how they live? Do you see how they treat each other? Do you see how they treat you? Do you see how they treat themselves? You want to give them the most precious resource that exists in the universe, that has ever existed and will ever exist. The beautiful, spiritually luminescent Torah. You want to give it to a mortal? To Yelod Isha, Ma Enosh Kisif Kedenu, Uben Adat Viz Kisis Kerenu. What is man? Man is so insignificant. Why would you give him anything? Rather, Ma Adir Shimcha B'chala Aretz Asher Tinei Hotcha L'Hashamayim. Amla Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Moshe. So this is incredible. So now the Malachim are putting up a fight. The Malachim do not want to release Torah. And so what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He turns to Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Hechzir lahen tshuva. So this is incredible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe, he says, Moshe, nu, what do you have to say? Answer them. They don't want to give you Torah. They're saying you're not worthy. Me'enosh kisizkerenu. What are you? So answer them. If you think you deserve it, then at the end of the day, answer them why I should give it to you. Why we should really start from the celestial sphere. So I just want to point out, whenever you see stories like this, Agadato and Chazal, obviously this is filled with so many incredible messages. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching us such a dramatic lesson. In life, if you want something, you have to advocate for yourself. You know, too many times in life, we expect other people to do things for us. Right? And we often use that as an excuse. I didn't accomplish this because my wife didn't do this. My husband didn't do this. My kids didn't do this. My friend didn't do this. My coworker didn't do this. My supervisor didn't do this. Okay? If you want something in life, don't rely on other people. Do not outsource your success to the hands of others. If you want something in life, make it happen yourself. If it happens, fantastic. You can give yourself a shkayach. And if it doesn't happen, understand that more often in life, more often than not in life, when things don't happen the way we wanted them, a lot of times it's because we did not take the reins. Sakadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you want the Torah? Answer them. Can you imagine poor Moshe Rabbeinu? Poor Moshe Rabbeinu. He's like, I'm just following instructions. You told me to come up the mountain. You told me to get the Torah. I'm a good soldier. Whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. And now he's up. There's an angelic ambush, right? Mamish, an angelic ambush. The Malachim are waiting for him. They're ganging up on him. And now Kadosh Baruch Hu is like, Moshe Rabbeinu, you got this. You got this. Answer them. Answer them. Amar the father Ribono Shel Misyari Ani Shem Yisufuni Mehavah Shel B'Piyam. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm scared. I'm scared that literally they're going to burn me with the breath of their mouth. So Moshe Rabbeinu was scared of the Malachim. The Malachim, the angels, are powerful. And I'm scared that they are going to hurt me. Amar lo, to which Kadosh Baruch Hu responds to Moshe, Echoz b'kisei kavodi, v'hechser lahem tshuva. Hold on to my throne. Hold on to my throne. That'll give you safety and security. And give them an answer. So again, another incredible lesson. That when you advocate for yourself, when you take the reins of your life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always says, hold on to my throne. See, the Ribono Shel Olam is always willing to be our partner in our life endeavors. But what he requires is for us to make the first step. Too often, we wait for God. And the irony is, God is waiting for us. So if you want something out of life, don't wait for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for that matter, anyone else to take action. If you want something in life, you begin by taking decisive action. But know that you could always hold on to the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to steady you in your journey forward. So now Moshe Rabbeinu has to give the Malachim an answer. So watch this. Amar Lefanav. So I just skipped two lines. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if you're following me in number three, I am 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down in source number 3, third word from the end of the line. Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam, Torah Sharata Nosin Li Maksiv Bei. So Moshe Rabbeinu is, you know, he's dialoguing with God, but he's really speaking to the Malachim. What does the Torah say? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzei Sicha Meretz Mitzrayim. Torah says, first of the Aseres HaDibros, first of the Ten Commandments, I am Hashem, your God, who has taken you out of Egypt. Amar Lahen, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Malachim, to the angels, L'mitzrayim yiradetem, tell me, angels, did you go down to Egypt? L'paro hishtabadetem, were you enslaved to Pharaoh? Torah lama tehilachem, what do you need Torah for? Did you ever suffer? Did you ever experience adversity? Did you ever suffer setbacks? So what do you need Torah for? What do you need Torah for? Shuv maksiv bei, lo yeh lecha Elohim achirim. Pasuk also says, next to the Ten Commandments, don't have any other gods. Prohibition against idolatry. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to the angels, Bein hagoyim atem shurim shovden avodazar. Tell me, angels, do you live amongst the nations of the world to worship idolatry, that you must be enjoined not to worship idolatry? Shuv maksiv bei, what else does the Torah say? Zachar es yom ha-shabbos lekadsho. Torah says, keep the Shabbos. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, excuse me, Moshe says to the Malachim, Klum atem osim malacha, sha'atem tzvichin shavus. Tell me, Malachim, do you work 6 days of the week that you have to go ahead and have a Shabbos? What your whole life is Shabbos. What do you need Shabbos for? Shuv maksiv bei. What else does the Torah say? Lo sisa, do not take God's name in vain. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Masu matan yish b'nechem. Tell me, do you have business dealings where sometimes people have to swear about things to each other, that you have to be enjoined not to take some God's name in vain? Shuv maksiv bei. What else does the Torah say? Kabir es avicha ve'esimecha. Torah says, honor your father and mother. Av va'im yesh lechem malochim, angels. Do you have a father and mother? Shuv maksiv bei. What else does the Torah say? Lo sirtzach, don't murder. Lo sinof, don't commit adultery. Lo signov, don't steal. Kina yesh b'nechem? Yetzahara yesh b'nechem? Tell me, is there jealousy amongst angels? Is there yetzahara, an evil inclination amongst angels? So Moshe Rabbeinu puts forward this whole, and he shows them, the Torah is filled with mitzvos. We'll see what the deeper meaning is in just a moment. But the Torah is filled with mitzvos. Malachim, these dynamics don't speak to you. Miad hodula HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Miad hodula HaKadosh Baruch Hu shene'emar. Hashem Adonenu ma'adir shimcha. So ultimately, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Moshe Rabbeinu's arguments reinforced the correctness of the divine decision. So Moshe Rabbeinu wins over God. Here, or meaning God was already, so to speak, won over. But not only that, miyad kol echad v'echad na'aselo ohev. All of the angels who were antagonistic up until this point became the best friends of Moshe Rabbeinu. Suddenly, again, they loved Moshe Rabbeinu. He's right. He's right. He's saying good. Right. He's right. He's right. So they became. They literally became the best friends. Umasar l'davar. And each malach, not only did they agree to give Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, but what? Each malach gave Moshe Rabbeinu a gift. They each gave Moshe Rabbeinu a gift. Now, what the gift was, Emir Tzashem, remains to be seen. So that, again, the Gemara goes on and discusses that. Even the Malach HaMavis gave Moshe Rabbeinu a gift. Everyone gave Moshe Rabbeinu a gift. So what I want to show you is something amazing. This Gemara is obviously a dramatically amazing Gemara, filled with incredible profundity and meaning. So what's happening here? Remember again, whenever you see a story like this in the Gemara, there's a lesson. Because remember, this story, obviously, as that I just shared with you, which is dramatic and amazing and overwhelming, is not found in the Torah. Right? You're not going to find this in the Chumash. In the Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, he comes down, sin of the golden calf. That's the story. Here, Chazal are telling us that there's a dramatic additional level to the narrative. So the Shaila, the question becomes, what's the message? Now, on a basic level, there is a tension between Moshe and the Malachim. Torah is being pulled upwards and downwards simultaneously. The Malachim are pulling the Torah upwards. Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to pull the Torah downwards. And what they're really arguing about is, where should Torah live? What they're really arguing about, ultimately, again, is where should God reside? What they're really arguing about is, where is the seat of ultimate spirituality? Is it in the heavens or is it in the earth? So take a look. I want to share with you a couple of approaches. If you look at number 4, you will find an incredible insight by the Mea Shiloach. The Mea Shiloach was the Ishbitzer, Rav Mordechai Yosef Liner, who lived from 1801 to 1854. And the Ishbitzer says something absolutely amazing. He says, "Hamalachim ta'anu." Here's what the Malachim were really saying. This was the claim of the Malachim. Chamud ginuza. So remember again, the Ishbitzer picks up, it's actually really quite interesting, on the wording of the Malachim. Right? The Malachim say Torah is a beautiful treasure. Chamud ginuza. He says, "Tenel gashman kiratsu rakis ahod vechem dasha Torah bichtelish tasheba." So remember again, the Ishbitzer makes an amazing observation. When you have a treasure, so what do you do with treasure? What do you do with treasure? You store it. Right? You put treasure in a treasure house. Right? What does the king do with his treasury? He has it, and maybe he goes in, he looks at it, he smiles at it, it makes him feel good. Right? No one goes out with their treasure. You don't take your treasure on vacation. You don't take your treasure on a walk with you. You don't, right? It's there. It's there. It's beautiful. It's incredible. Right? You know, it's just like, you know, like the Havdol. No one goes to the bank and goes up to a teller and says, you know, I'd like to see my cash. Do you mind? I have a checking account here. There's $5,000. Would you mind bringing it out? I haven't seen my cash in a while. Bring out the cash. If you don't mind, bring it in singles, because I'd love to see everything. Right? No one does that. Right? Again, why? Because it's in my checking account. I know that it's there and it's fine. Again, I need it, Baruch Hashem. But no, that's what happens with treasure. So this is incredible. The Ishbitzer says that the Malachim were saying, we need Torah to reside here. It's in the treasure house of God, and it's beautiful. What we love, so I Malachim, what do you do with Torah? Every day we go and we look at it. We look at it, and we gaze at it, and we fawn over it, and it's beautiful, and it's fantastic, and it's gorgeous. That's what the Malachim did with Torah. So says Moshe Rabbeinu, number 4, second line. V'ilu Moshe anavahem leparish tabaratem klumatem osim malacha. Uchimedoma hatora amnam shashuahi avakede liskos lishashuaze sarich laamo batora. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Malachim, you don't understand. Torah is not a treasure that you stare at. Torah is something that you live. You see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this thing called Torah so that it could inform and it could shape the way that we live, the people we become, the identities we forge, the lifestyles we create. Look what Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Malachim. He says, Malachim, tell me, did you go down to Egypt? What does that mean? What does that mean? Egypt represents adversity. Torah teaches us how to deal with adversity. So Moshe says, Malachim, tell me, how much adversity exactly do you run into the celestial sphere? Right? How much adversity? How much adversity? Right? There's not all that much adversity up in Shemayim. There's not. HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels the pain ultimately again of the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels quote unquote existential pain. But Lamaisa the Malachim, there's no adversity. So you don't need Torah to help you navigate adversity because you don't have adversity. Do you have parents? Yeah, parents. Torah teaches us how to manage relationships. Good relationships and complex relationships. Tell me, Malachim, do you have relationships? Don't kill. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. We're human beings. We have lust. We have desire. We have wants. And a lot of times, it's for stuff that I should not have lust or desire for. Torah helps me manage those desires. Torah helps me keep that flame of lust and desire in check so that it does not become a fire that destroys me and everything around me. Malachim, tell me, do you have those issues? Do you have those issues? Are those issues existent in Shemayim? And of course, the answer is no. An example after example after example, Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Malachim, lo yelecha Elohim al acherim. There's a prohibition not to have idolatry. What does that represent? Idolatry? Theological crisis. Malachim, do you have theological crises? Bepashtos, not. Not. There's a lot of theological clarity in the celestial sphere, but we do. So we have all these crises, we have all these difficulties, and the beauty of Torah is that Torah helps us navigate them. You see, we often think that Torah is something you learn, right? That what do you do with Torah? You learn Torah. Learning Torah is one very small piece. Do you know what you do with Torah? You live Torah. Of course, in order to live Torah, you have to learn. Learning is not the ends. Learning is a means to living Torah. Isn't that the ultimate goal of life? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a great gift of Torah. You know, I think a lot of times, if you ask Jews, right, what was it a gift that we received Torah? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu really do us a favor? Did He do us a favor by giving us Torah? So I think, of course, everyone always says yes, right? But that's because we need to sound frum. But I think if a person were to really, if you ask a lot of people that question, was it a gift that God gave us Torah? I don't know. I think a lot of people think themselves, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a gift. It's a lot of stuff, right? It's a lot of mitzvahs and a lot of things I have to do, a lot of things I don't have to do. Would life have been simpler with, 500 instead of 613? Maybe 300, maybe 7 sounds good, like our Gentile brethren. I don't know. But that's because a lot of times we look at Torah as a system of do's and don'ts instead of looking at Torah as the playbook for life. Any single life situation that you encounter, the way to deal with it is in the Torah. Sometimes it's explicit and sometimes it's nuanced. Sometimes it's a passage in the Torah. Sometimes it's a statement in the Gemara. And sometimes it's a level of understanding that comes from being steeped in Torah. You know, we speak about the concept of Das Torah. Right? And again, that concept means different things to different people in different ways. But what does Das Torah mean? What is it that a person goes to a Rav, a person goes to a Tzaddik, a person goes to a Rebbe? Why does that person know anything more about anything else in life than I do? So the answer is, it's not that they know more about stuff, but it's that we assume that a person who is steeped in Torah understands life in a different way. They have a clarity of vision that I don't, because I'm not steeped in Torah. They have a clarity even to look at my life challenges in a way that I cannot, because they are steeped in a system that teaches us not just what to learn, but how to live. Says the Ishbitzer, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Malachim. I got it. You guys want to keep the Torah up here because you want to stare at it. Fantastic. You want to stare at the treasure. Good. I'm sure you guys spend a lot of time staring at the Torah of treasure. Or the treasure of Torah. Fantastic. But I have a better option for Torah. I can make Torah useful down on the earth. Because in the earth, we're not going to stare at it. In the earth, we're going to learn it and we're going to live it. You, Malachim, Baruch Hashem, you don't have a need for it because you don't have the struggles, the trials and tribulations that we have here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us the Torah. Let us learn it. Let us live it. And let us use it to help us navigate the tumultuous waters of life. And the Malachim hear this and they say, Moshe, you know what? You're right. You're right. Can't argue with that. It's been wonderful for 974 generations and so many others to look at Torah every day, right? The Malachim say, all right, guys, right, time, break time, let's go look at the Torah, right? Let's go marvel at it. Let's go look at it. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. Moshe says, beautiful. I'm happy you've enjoyed it. Could we please have it now so that we could actually lead and live more impactful lives? The Malachim say, Moshe, you're absolutely right. So according to the Ishbitzer, that's what the machlokes is. But again, according to the Ishbitzer, then the message of this Gemara is that Torah is not simply for us to learn, but it's for us to live. And the reason why this is very important is for the following reason. We've discussed this concept before, which is whether we recognize it or not, a lot of times in life we live with cognitive dissonance. So what's cognitive dissonance? Cognitive dissonance means I know that something is, let's say, not good for me. I know it intellectually, but I do not live my life reflecting that idea. So for example, you know, if I decide that I'm going on a diet, I know that chocolate cake is not something that I should have. I'm not going to have chocolate cake, but it's there. It's there. And I'm probably still going to eat it. Now, if you ask me, is this a good thing, Shmuel Silber, is this a good thing for you to eat the chocolate cake? No, of course not. Why isn't it good? I'm going to list you all the reasons why eating the chocolate cake is good. But I'm going to list you those reasons as I'm putting forkful after forkful in my mouth. Well, 1 second. How does it? You just told me the chocolate cake is not good for your diet, yet you're going and you're eating it. No. I know that's true. I just don't live that way. So I know it's true. And I know this sounds a little bit strange, but we do this all of the time. I know that there are things that I should not be doing. I know that there are elements of my lifestyle that are not correct. I know that there are parts of my personality that absolutely need to change. I know it. I could identify it. I just don't live it. And a lot of times we do this with spirituality. I know what I need to do. People often wonder, what's my purpose in this world? You could figure it out if you really want to. You could figure out what you should do when you grow up if you really want to. But a lot of times we say we're interested in figuring these things out, but to be honest, we're not really so interested. Because if I figure out what I have to do with my life, then that actually creates an incredible urgency in my day-to-day existence to perform. And the truth is, I'm kind of happy coasting. So we live a little bit with this cognitive dissonance. And what the Ishbitzer is saying, what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying is, Torah is not just something that you could have over here and I'm over here. So Torah, I love it. I love Torah. I love Torah. I can't get enough Torah. But Torah, don't come any closer. If you don't mind, Torah, just stay over there. Just stay over there. Right? I'm here. You stay there. I'm like a malach. I like to look at you. I like to praise you. I like to extol you. I love to gaze at you. I love to look at your spiritual luminescent beauty. But don't come one step closer. Because if you come one step closer, I have to change the way I live. I have to change the way I act. I have to change what I do. And I'm not, to be honest, I'm just not really interested in that. And Moshe Rabbeinu, the argument that won the day. So really, it's interesting. The irony of ironies is what we kind of want is the same thing as the Malachim. I want to be able to look at Torah when I want to. And I want to be able to gaze at Torah when I want to. I just don't necessarily want to have to live it when it's not convenient for me. And this is something, and again, we all struggle with this different ways because the truth is, all of us live in a state of cognitive dissonance in one area or another. We all do it. That's because no one's perfect. No one's perfect. So I might do it with chocolate cake. Another person might do it with lashon hara. A third person might do it with immorality. Another person might this. We all have those elements of our life. But what the Ish Bitzer says, what the Torah, what the Gemara is trying to teach us, is at the end of the day. At the end of the day, the beauty of Torah is not simply found in wrapping your arms around it, and it's not simply found in learning it. The beauty and profundity of Torah lies in living it. So it's only once I live it does it become something meaningful. Now, of course, the prerequisite to living it is learning it. You can't live it if you don't know what it says. You can't live it if you don't take the time to understand it. But the goal is not to learn it, and the goal is not to look at it, and the goal is not to embrace it. But the ghost of, you know, I mentioned this in a different shir, that Yossi ben Yoezer, in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, I give a Pirkei Avos shir Mondays and Tuesdays, that Yossi ben Yoezer writes in Pirkei Avos, and some of you may have heard this, I apologize if it's repetitive, when speaking about the words of the sages and the words of the Torah, says, Havishose b'tzames divrehem, drink the words of Torah thirstily. Thirstily. And so the commentaries on the Mishnah are bothered by, why does he have to say drink it thirstily? Just say drink it. Just say drink it. So there's a difference, you know, if somebody gives you a nice drink, but you're not thirsty, so you'll say thank you, and it'll sit on the table in front of you, and maybe you'll have it, maybe you won't have it. But when you're thirsty, and someone gives you a drink, it's like they've given you, like, life-saving elixir. So Yossi ben Yoezer says, you have to look at Torah, not just as a beautiful glass of water, but a beautiful glass of water when you're dying of thirst. Because that beautiful glass of water and you're dying of thirst, I can't live without it. I can't live without it. And that's the mindset Yossi ben Yoezer says we have to go ahead and adopt with Torah as well. Torah, sometimes you look, Torah is nice, Torah is beautiful, it's wonderful. Can I live without it? I don't know, but I don't have a choice, right? I'm a Jew, so I don't have a choice whether or not to live without it. No. But to go ahead, says Moshe Rabbeinu, and to realize that Torah shapes everything about my life. Torah teaches me how to live. Torah teaches me how to navigate the Egypts of existence. Torah teaches me how to navigate philosophical, intellectual, theological difficulties. Torah teaches me how to deal with the harmful lusts and desires of existence. Torah teaches me all of this. But at the end of the day, that's only true if what? If I go ahead and I learn it, I live it, and I internalize it. Torah is not there to be looked at and admired. Torah is there ultimately, again, to be learned, to be lived, and to be absorbed. Take a look at number 5. The Chanukah HaTorah says something a little bit different. The Chanukah HaTorah was written by Rav Avram Yehoshua Heschel, who lived from 1595 to 1663. He was the Rav of Krakow. In fact, again, in the old cemetery in Krakow, right by the Ramah Shul, you could visit his kever, you could visit his grave. He's buried right there. So the Chanukah HaTorah says something absolutely amazing. He says, B'shar Shalom O Shalom Aram. See, he extracts a different message from this. He says, Hashaklo v'tariyo shebein Moshe v'nev ha-malachim. Well, what's the meaning of this back and forth between Moshe and the angels? Ki ha-malachim, listen to what he says. Ki ha-malachim ta'anu, d'cheivan da'adam alo lachto, im kein t'nehotcha ala shamayim. This is incredible. Says the Chanukah HaTorah, we're going to see this is echoed by a couple of other sources as well. The malachim were saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why would you give Torah to a being that is imperfect? Man is going to sin, right? Again, we always speak about this. If there is one constant, if there's one thing that you could always bank on in any single one of your human relationships, it is that what? Again, we speak about this often. It sounds like a very downer type thing. The people who you love will always fail you. Now, not always fail you, but inevitably at some point in time will fail you. Why? Because human beings are frail and we fail. The same way God knows we're going to fail. I know my spouse is going to fail at some point in time. My children are going to fail. My friends are going to fail. I'm going to fail them. They're going to fail me. That's just the nature of human relationships. We're frail and therefore we fail. So the Chanukah HaTorah says, the Malachim are saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah is perfect. Torah is perfect. Torah is pristine. Torah is beautiful. Why would you give it to human beings who you know are going to mess up. They're not going to always listen to your Torah. They're not always going to heed divine direction. So why, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are you going to give them this most awesome of treasures? So this is incredible. So I just want to take you back for just a moment. Go back to number three, just for a second. So if you remember again, one of the things that was dramatic about this Gemara is the Malachim put up the resistance to giving the Torah. And you would have thought that God would have helped Moshe Rabbeinu out a little bit. But if you remember again, what happens? I'm at number three, just so you see it. One, two, three, four, five lines into number three. So the Malachim are challenging Moshe Rabbeinu. They're challenging Moshe Rabbeinu, and they're saying, well, they're really challenging God's decision, but they're saying, don't give the Torah to man. So remember again, now number three, one, two, three, four, five lines. I'm not going to speak to Moshe. Hechzir lahen tshuva. So God says to Moshe, answer them. So the simple reading of that Gemara is, God says to Moshe, listen, you know, you got to advocate. Like we said before, you have to advocate for yourself. You must advocate for yourself. Answer them, right? Give them an answer to their question. Says the Chanukah Torah, says Rav Avraham Yehoshua Heschel of Krakow, says, no, that's not what God was saying. Go back to number five for just a moment. Heshev leMoshe Rabbeinu, hechzer lahem tshuva. God was giving Moshe Rabbeinu the answer. The answer was, hechzer lahem. Tell the Malachim that the answer to their question is tshuva. You see, the Malachim were saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can you go ahead and give such a frail being Torah? How can you give mankind Torah? They're going to sin. They're going to mess up. They're going to they're going to do terrible, terrible things. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, he whispers in Moshe Rabbeinu's ear, Hechzer lahen, answer them one word. What's the one word? Tshuva. The one word is tshuva. The answer to the Malachim is tshuva. Moshe Rabbeinu tell the Malachim that man is capable of doing something that no angel could ever dream of. Man is capable of comprehensive cathartic change. Man is capable of bettering himself. Man is capable of falling down and getting back up. You see, the Malachim can't relate to that. Because the truth is, Malachim can't really fall. Can't really fail. They're too big to fail, right? They can't fall and they can't fail. They can't really change or evolve in any way. And if you can't change or evolve, then what's the point of having Torah? Isn't Torah, isn't the essence of Torah, the ability to become the best version of ourselves? Isn't the greatness of Torah to refine the most animalistic desires that I have and to propel myself to higher heights? Isn't the essence of Torah to ultimately again make myself in the divine image to the best of my ability? So the Malachim are saying, how could we go ahead and give Torah to frail and imperfect human beings? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu whispers in Moshe Rabbeinu's ear, Hechzer lahem tshuva. Tell them that's exactly the point. Torah's job is not to reside in the cradle of perfection. Torah's job is to go into the pits of imperfection and to help the imperfect get back up, refine themselves, and become just a bit better. You see what? And again, then what Moshe Rabbeinu does is he gives just a whole series of examples about that. Did you go down to Egypt? Remember again what happened to us in Egypt. In Egypt, we descended to the 49th level of Tumah. We almost reached the point of no return. God tells us not to worship idolatry. We know we've spent many a generation worshiping idolatry. God tells us to honor our parents, yet very often we do not. So Torah gives us the instructions, but Torah also tells us that when we fall and when we fail, how to get back up. When God says, Hechzer lahen tshuva, we were translating as God saying to Moshe, no, give them an answer. Says the Chanukah, no. God was whispering in Moshe's ear, Hechzer lahem, answer them one word, tshuva. Malachim, we man have the ability to do something that you can never dream of. The ability to change. The ability to evolve. the ability to become better than we ever were, the ability to become something more special than we ever dreamed about, or that anyone else ever thought we could become. You malochim, you are what you are. You are chariot. Remember, you know all the stories of malochim Bereishis, right? Where the malochim, three malochim, come to the tent of Avram Avinu. One to go ahead and heal Avram, one to announce the birth of Yitzchak, and one to go ahead and save Lot from Sodom, or destroy Sodom. Right? So, you know, whenever we read that, we say to ourselves, Rashi already says it. Really? You need one malach to do each of that? Like, one malach couldn't take care of all three of those things? My to-do list on any given day is more comprehensive than that. Right? So you're telling me again, one malach for each task? Yeah, that's the way angels work. Angels are one-dimensional. They're one-dimensional. So the malach that heals Avram, it's a different skill set than the malach who goes in and announces the birth of Yitzchak, which is a different skill set than the malach who goes to Sodom. One human being could do all of those tasks. One human being could do all of those tasks and still have time for lunch, right? One human being could do all of those tasks and take on another five tasks. Yet angels, one task, day is done. Scary, schedule filled. God, you want to schedule in for something else? You're going to have to call in the backup, right? You're going to have to call the angelic temp agency because I'm sorry, I'm booked. I'm booked for today, right? My schedule is heal Avram. It takes you 3 minutes. Sorry, that's right. That's it. That's all I have on my schedule. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Hechzer lahem tshuva. Go ahead and tell them that man has the ability, malachim, you see, the whole argument of the malachim is predicated on the fact that angels are superior to man. Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, he whispers in the ear, it's time for you to burst their angelic bubble. They're not greater than man. We are greater than malachim. Now, it's interesting. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to say it, apparently, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be sensitive to the malachim as well, because the malachim are just going to be dealt a mighty blow. They lived all of these years thinking that they are the best creation in the world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, let them know that that's not the case. Hechzer lahem, tell them, tshuva. We can do something they cannot. And that one thing that we can do, that nothing else in the world could do, is what makes us the crown jewel of creation. My friends, do you hear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying? Do you know what the greatest accomplishment of man is? The greatest accomplishment of man is the ability to change. That's what makes us the crown jewel of creation. Nothing else in the world could change. If the zebra wants to be a hamster, right? No matter, this is interesting because, you know, in today's society, we're actively pushing back against this concept, right? In today's society, one of the messages that's being promoted is, you could be whatever you want to be. I bet you're not. You're not. You're either a man or you're a woman. And just because you feel different doesn't make you different. But again, in society, we're saying no. Everything is what you feel. Now, I want to just point out to you. You see, you have to understand something. Everything that comes out in society comes from a place of kedusha. So let's say even now, when there is this mindset that says, whatever gender you feel like, that's what you are. So to us, it sounds crazy, but you have to understand that it comes from a place of holiness. You see, I know this sounds a little bit strange. Deep down, what that message comes from is from the soul that says you could be anything you want. The problem is, like any message in life, you have to channel it in the right way. If you channel it in the wrong way, it could be disastrous and destructive, which is what we see happening in greater society. If you channel it in the right way, it could propel you to the heights of holiness. So this notion that we think is crazy, what? Today you could be a man because you feel like a man, and tomorrow you're a woman, and the next day you're binary, and the next day this. It's all dependent on how you feel. And say yourself, that's ridiculous. Here's the funny part is it's not so ridiculous. We believe in that. Listen to the end of this sentence, please. Right? We believe in that as well. We just believe in that in the properly channeled fashion. Yes, I absolutely believe that I could be whatever I want because yesterday I was a Rasha. And today, I want to be a tzaddik. Are you going to say, that's crazy? Yesterday, you were a Rasha. And today, you're going to be a tzaddik. It's actually not crazy. I can be whatever I want. And that is an absolutely true statement. Now again, obviously it has limitations. If today I decide, you know what, I deserve a seat on the SpaceX rocket, okay, perhaps that's not going to happen, right? So that's, by the way, that's not called developing your potential. That's called a flawed sense of entitlement, right? When you think that you should have everything, that's entitlement, and that's fundamentally wrong. That is a negative byproduct of Western society, right? We don't believe in entitlement. That's not what we believe. We believe is if you want something, you could work hard and you could get it. Maybe you will get it, maybe you won't get it, but no one owes you anything. But the notion that I, on a personalistic level, could be whatever I want, that is unequivocally and absolutely true. That is the guiding light principle. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu whispers in Moshe's ear, tshuva. You see, when we think about tshuva, we offer them tshuva. It's like, you know, ashamnu, bagadnu, gazalnu, al chet shachatanu lefanecha, avinu, malkeinu. That's one part of tshuva. Tshuva, in its essence, means the ability to change. The ability to change. Make yourself into who you want to be. You're unhappy with who you see looking in the mirror like so many people are. Change it. Change it. You're not stuck. You're not stuck. You may not be able to change your financial position immediately. You may not be able to change your looks immediately. You may not be able to change your height immediately. There are certain things that they are what they are. But in terms of your spiritual identity, who you are in this world, that's up to you. Hechzer lehem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu whispers in Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to have to burst the angelic bubble. They think that they are the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? They think that they are the crown jewel of creation. Moshe, Moshe, if you don't mind, can you imagine the scene? Moshe says, God says to Moshe, do you mind telling them that they're wrong? Since the beginning of time, this is how they've thought. Moshe, I think it's going to come off better if it comes from you than if it comes from me, right? Do you ever have a situation like this? Somebody asks you to deliver news, and of course, your first reaction is, why can't you do that, right? Why do I have to be the bearer? So here, poor Moshe Rabbeinu just comes up to get the Torah, and after this prophet comes up, by the way, just tell the angels they're actually not the crown jewel of creation. And Moshe Rabbeinu essentially says it, but he says it in a very sensitive way. He says, we have the ability to change. We suffer setback, we suffer difficulty, but we have the ability to change. You malachim, you're static. You're static. You cannot change. And the malachim say, you know what? You're right. You're right. It's great being an angel. It's fantastic being an angel. Job security, right? Closeness to God, eternality. It's fantastic. The one drawback is you are what you are forever. There's no climbing the ladder, right? There's no job advancement. There's no, I heard Gavriel might be stepping down. You know, maybe I should put my resume in for that one. You know, there's none of that. There's none of that. Whatever you are, you are. Hopefully you're happy with it. And, you know, I'm sure they all are all happy with it. That's what it is for eternity. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, by the way, Malachim, it's a little bit different over here. Today I'm a Rasha, but tomorrow I could be a Tzaddik. And yesterday, I totally did not tap into my potential, but tomorrow I'm going to start. And today, I decided that I want to be a dramatically different person than I was for the last 40 years. And guess what? All of that's possible down here. None of that is possible with you guys. None of it is possible. And the Malachim hear this, and they say, you know what? You're right. You're right. You can't argue with truth. And so ultimately, the Malachim give Moshe Rabbeinu a bracha. They become his friends. And they relinquish and release their grasp and their grip on Torah. In fact, if you take a look at number 7, with this we'll conclude. The Avodas Yisrael writes, this is the Kuznetzer Magid. So the Kuznetzer Magid writes, he says something so beautiful. He says, Amru b'gimara, kisheratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu liten haTorah liYisrael, v'amalachim t'nei hotcha. So the Kuznetzer Magid is intrigued by Moshe Rabbeinu's choices of examples. So remember again, the first example he gives is, Malachim, tell me, the Torah says, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Malachim, tell me, were you in Egypt? Were you ever in Egypt that you need a Torah? So look what the Kuznetzer Magid says. Ubera Inyan, second line, end of the second line, number 7. Ubera Inyan, Kinemar Vavarti Veritzim, Anivilo Malach, Upera Sharizal, Shafilu Malach, Yore Lavar Mitzim, Ne Riboy Kochos Atum Ayin Sham. So the Arizal says something amazing. We know that by Makkas Bechoros, we say this in the Seder, by Makkas Bechoros, it was God who redeemed us. God who took us out of Egypt, not a Malach. No angel, just God. So the Arizal says, why is that? So again, we often look at it as a testament to the love between God and Klal Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu loved us so much that He Himself took us out and not an angel. And the Arizal says something absolutely amazing. There was a different reason also. Egypt was the pit of depravity and impurity. And writes the Arizal, the angels were too scared to go into Egypt. Why? Because they were scared that they would get pulled down into the pit of impurity of Egypt. There was such impurity, such depravity, such immorality, such cruelty, such anger in Egypt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't dispatch anyone else to extract the people from Egypt. Only I, God, myself, going to go. Because even if I send a malach, there's a risk that the malach will get pulled in to the negativity, the unholiness, and the depravity of Egypt. So v'zeh shamar Moshe, v'gdol shevach Yisrael, shem ru'uyum mekabel ha-Torah, yosem in ha-malachim, shehayu, heim hayu b'makom tuma kazu, shafilu malach yorei lavor. Listen, the Kashnitzer Magid says something amazing. It says, Moshe Abinu says to the malachim, malachim, you remember the night that God took us out of Egypt? The malachim say, of course. And I, who took us out? Who took us out? And the malachim says, Echlesh Baruch Hu. Why was it HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not any of you? You're all capable angels. So the Malachim say, because again, Egypt was too impure. That even the angels could not venture into Egypt without fear of being pulled in, of being sucked into the impurity. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know what? I was in Egypt. We were in Egypt. Klal Yisrael was in Egypt. And 49 days later, we received the Torah. 49 days later, we said Naaseh v'Nishma. We lived 210 years in the pit of that depravity, in the pit of that unholiness, ungodliness, in the pit of idolatry, immorality, everything else that Egypt had. And yet we were able to change. We were able to go ahead and lift ourselves up from the pit of depravity. You see, what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Malachim was, you couldn't venture into Egypt because you were afraid that if you would go in, you would not get out. We got out. We got out. We got out. Not only did we get out, we rehabilitated ourselves. We lifted ourselves up. We became someone and something greater. And by the way, in a relatively short amount of time, 7 weeks, and it doesn't mean there weren't bumps on the road, and it doesn't mean there weren't setbacks, but isn't it incredible, says the Kashnitzer Magid, that when it comes to redemption from Egypt, only God could handle the task. Because Egypt was so unholy that the Malachim were scared of getting sucked in and unable to extricate themselves. And yet, we spent 210 years in that very pit of depravity and were able to lift ourselves up, rehabilitate ourselves, and remake ourselves. So Moshe Rabbeinu once again demonstrating that the reason why man is the crown jewel of accomplishment, and this is incredible, the reason why we are the crown jewel of accomplishment is not because we have the ability to learn more Torah than anyone else, and not because you have the ability to do more mitzvot than anyone else, and not even because you have the ability to do more chesed than anyone else, right? There's plenty of chesed in the world. All these things are not uniquely Jewish, right? You can have non-Jews who love Torah and learn as much Torah as well, if not more Torah. You can have non-Jews who do all of these things, right? I shouldn't even say it's not a Jewish versus non-Jewish thing. It's a human being thing. So what is it that makes man unique? What makes us unique is our ability to change. The koach of change, which is what tshuva is. Tshuva is not just simply clapping on your chest because you did something wrong. Tshuva is the ability to remake over and over and over yourself. Tshuva is the ability to say, just because I've been a certain way for a certain amount of time does not mean I must remain that way for the rest of my life. Nothing else in the world has this koach. Like I was saying before, the zebra can't become the hamster. No matter how much he identifies with the plight of the hamster, or how much he feels drawn to the hamster narrative, or how much he feels that ultimately, again, the hamster dynamic is really one that speaks to me. Not gonna happen. You could try, you could live with them, you could nest with them. Not gonna happen. The Malach, right? Gavriel can't become Michael, right? And Michael can't become Metatron, and Metatron can't become this. That's it. They're all great Malachim. but no one of them could morph into anything other than what they were created. Than what they were created. Yet, there is only one creation in the entire world that has the ability to truly change, and that is man. Now, I want to point out one thing, and I realize I'm out of time. Change can happen in other parts of the world, also other parts of creation. But the change that happens in other parts of creation is not because the creation decided to change, but it's often because forces acted upon it. For example, rock formations could change, right? They could change, but they change as a result of forces that act upon them, right? So if the water drips on the rock, of course the rock will change, but it's not because the rock changed. It's because something changed the rock, right? So ultimately, again, land masses could change because of shifting of continental plates or because of earthquakes or because of a whole variety of different things. But it's not the pshat because the land mass decided, you know what? I could be a better land mass if I looked like this or if I moved myself just a little bit over here. So they could change when they're acted upon. And a lot of times in life, we also only change when acted upon. I would venture to say 99% of human change only occurs when it has to change. When someone pushes me to, or something pushes me to change. But I have the great secret that nothing else in this universe has. Is I could change of my own volition. I could change because I want to. I could move myself. I could move my personal mountain without it being acted upon if I choose to do so. This was the answer that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to the Malachim. So to bring this all together, with this I apologize over time, with this I really will end. So going back, so what happens when Moshe Rabbeinu gets up on the mountain? What are the Malachim saying? The Malachim say to him, from Perek Chesen Tehillim, Ma Enosh Kisiskerenu, Uven Adam Kisifkedenu, who are you? Who are you? You're a nothing, you're an ant. You're an ant. You're not even an ant. We could flick you out if you're like a little nothing. You're here today. You're gone tomorrow. What are you, 120 years? 120 years for a malach is like the blink of an eye. Who are you? What are you? The moon is bigger than you. The sun is bigger than you. This mountain is bigger than you. And you have the chuspah. You want to come here and take the greatest treasure ever known and you want to bring it down to earth? What are you talking about? Who are you? Who are you? Me'enosh kisiskerenu, what are you? And to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu whispers in Moshe Rabbeinu's ear, just give him one answer, one word, tshuva. Who am I? I am the only being in this entire universe who has the ability to engage in voluntary change. I am the only being in this entire universe who could choose to remake myself right now if I want to. Can you do that? Malach, can you do that? Sun, can you do that? Moon, you're all bigger than me, all stronger than me, but none of you have the most important koach that exists in this universe, which is the ability to change on demand, the ability to change at will. And when Moshe Rabbeinu says that to the Malachim and illustrates this in all the different examples, you couldn't even come into Egypt because you would get sucked in. Yet I could live in Egypt for 210 years. I could live in the pit of depravity, in the pit of adverse circumstances, and yet rehabilitate myself and make myself into someone who's capable of saying Naaseh v'Nishma. Only I can do that, says Moshe Rabbeinu. None of you can do that. Miyad Naasu La'avav. All the Malachim became his best friends. And even if you see this is the progression, you don't have to look back. I'll just tell you this outside. That's why, again, even going back to the kapitel, right after David HaMelech says, Me'enosh kisis gerenu, ben adam kisif kedeyu, what is kisif kedeyu? What is man that you should remember him? The very next pasuk, David HaMelech says, Vatachsireyu me'at me'elokim. Man is only slightly less than God. Because the only other being in this world, who in this universe, who has the ability to affect change is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are only two beings in this world that have the ability to affect change. God and man. So although when you look at the natural world, man looks very small. Man looks very small. You look at the sun, you look at the stars, you look at the moon, and man looks very small. We may be small in stature, but we are only slightly less than the Ribono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to change. We have the ability to change. And therein lies the greatest koach of man. And therein lies the reason that we are indeed the crown jewel of all creation. A lot of times in life, there are things that we want to change, but we feel powerless to do so. We should gain incredible chizuk from this. There are many things in life that you can't change. That is very true. You can't change other people. You often can't change life circumstances. But the thing that matters most in life, which is you, is the one thing that you absolutely control the ability to change. Halavai neschus of these words, may we find the koach to make the changes we need to do to assume our rightful place as the crown jewel of all of creation. We'll stop over here for today. We will, Amir Tashem, continue with this kapitel next week. Thank you for everyone for joining us. Wishing everyone a wonderful day. Of course. Have a good day, everyone.